Hello and what is shaking, everybody? Welcome to the Wind Up Podcast. It is a beautifully rainy day out here in Napa as we're recording this episode. I hope it finds you well. I am Mike of MTGA Wines, and today we are diving back into some dollars and cents hot off of a industry gathering and kind of seminar with the Napa Valley Vintners. Today, I literally got home 15 minutes ago from sitting in on this event. Had a lovely, lovely time in terms of the company, of course, what we are discussing, the state of the wine industry as a whole, but Napa specifically, something that we've talked a lot about on this here show. And we're going to dive into it a little bit more, a little bit deeper today. Before we do, as always, we have a handful of quick announcements to get through. So now's the time to either fast forward a couple of times to avoid the announcements, or you can sit here and listen to me, speak very, delightfully or something. I don't know. I'm trying to make the announcement portion of this show more interesting. I doubt it's going to be possible, but here are your announcements. For the day. Sorry, I'm a little bit, my brain's going 1,000 miles an hour right now post event and kind of all the thoughts that I'm trying to absorb from this meeting that we are at. So before we get into it, number one, I mean, of course, continue to like, share, subscribe to the show here, whether that's on our social networks, that's at MTGA Wines on YouTube, Instagram, The Book of Face, as well as the social network formerly known as Twitter. We're fairly active on all of those, primarily Instagram and YouTube, where you can catch the video version of this here program. You can also see this posted on X as well. Be sure to head to our website, that's mtjwines.com. As you scroll down to the bottom of the homepage there, that's where you can submit questions for our monthly Q&A episodes, which happen at the end of every month. We just had our January Q&A posted last week. If there's anything you want to know more about the wine business, hospitality, the wine industry, winemaking, anything and everything is fair game. Submit your questions, or you can slide into our DMs on any of those social networks I mentioned, and I will try and answer them to the best of my ability. Number three, we are still brought to you by Premier Crew Clothing, our fun, kitschy, wine-inspired t-shirt line that we go or that we have going on. It is Premier Crew, that's C-R-U, clothing.com. You can use code PREMIER during checkout to get 20% off your first order. I have a handful of these here t-shirts in my closet. They are comfy. They are nice. They are fun. The DRC, very AC/DC logo-esque, allegedly. Fun for those of you that know what DRC is in the first place. Plus a whole bunch of other things. So go get your 20% off. Go get yourself some wine-related swag. It's amazing. Last but certainly not least, I know there are some of you that are on our mailing list in our wine club. We just are getting through the tail end of processing our winter wine club shipment. Many of you are a part of that. Please be sure to keep an eye out for the tracking information, which will be coming your way later this week. All the orders are officially packed up. We're just waiting for UPS, FedEx, and whatnot to scan them and get them on their way to you. So that tracking information will be headed your way. If you are at all interested in supporting us as a small label and brand out here in Napa, you can again head to our website, mtjwines.com, to find out more about what we do, who we are, the wine club, how to get these wines to your front door. Just please be 21 years or older. Kind of important when it comes to the consumption of alcohol in this here country. But that's really the only requirement. Outside of that, just make sure that you enjoy good wine, and I think you'll be all right from there. Okay, let's get into it, shall we? I've got my tea. I'm feeling a little raspy because it was a loud environment. We were talking a lot of shop. So if you hear a few pauses for station identification, that's why. I'm also still getting over that obnoxious cold I had 2 weeks ago. Luckily, it's mostly gone, but still, a little bit of that airplane head still hanging around. But nothing, a little bit of hot tea and a heavy lunch with some wine. That'll help sort it out a little bit. At least that's what I think. Now, I think many of you, or at least some of us, we've been to, different kind of corporate meetings, seminars, conferences, and things before, and very typically, you get like a nugget of information out of them, right? Like you're not necessarily going to go in there and have like your, you know, socks knocked off. The doors aren't going to be blown open. It's going to be like, okay, yeah, this is a lot of kind of business as usual type stuff. But every once in a while, you do find some things that are like, okay, this is a cool like nugget of information. It's interesting how they're presenting this. I haven't really thought about it that way before. And, you know, going to these meetings with the Napa Valley vintners and other colleagues within the wine industry are no different. You know, every once in a while, you find that great piece of information that can really help your business or at least help you professionally in some way. But you got to sift through a lot of other stuff. And that was very much the case this afternoon on this rainy Tuesday as I'm recording this on February 4th. It was just that. A lot of it was kind of reinforcing the vibes. And quite honestly, for those of you that have listened to the last few episodes, and of course, over the course, you know, probably the last 8 months or so, as we've talked about kind of the downturn of the Napa grape market, the downturn in sales, distribution, trouble with margins, and being long on inventory, and kind of the anti-alcohol movement that's happening right now, all of that was echoed during this meeting. So there was a lot of the, you know, yeah, we get it. We've been living this for a while. We understand what's happening. I think what's really interesting, one of the main nuggets that I took from this actually, was that it's not like this started last year and is all of a sudden like a shock to the system. What we've seen, and this is kind of more the broad market, kind of like macroeconomic part of it, was that we've seen wine sales and alcohol sales decline, and specifically wine sales decline in retail shops and restaurants for 4 consecutive years. Post-COVID, you know, as things are slowly starting to open back up in 21, 2, 3, to today, we've seen sales decline across the board in retail shops and restaurants for 4 consecutive years. If that doesn't mean the wine industry is in some sort of correction or recession, I don't know what is. What is it typically, I think, for like if for a global or if you're an economy, it's 3 consecutive quarters. We've had now 3 or 4 years of consecutive downturn with some blips here or there that have shown to be positive. So to put it lightly, the wine industry hasn't gotten any easier over the last 4 years. And we've talked a lot about that in terms of the rising costs, the challenge of selling wine right now, the amount of inventory we have. Like there's a lot of factors that are coming together right now to make it more difficult. But this is the next point that really kind of, and we talked a lot about that. So I'm not gonna dive too much into that. If you're interested in grape pricing, please go check out the Napa Grape Market Imploding episode from this fall. Go check out the beginning of the end episode from a few weeks ago. Like we've talked a lot about, you know, the state of the industry and the challenges therein. I'm going to try and avoid that for the rest of the show because I feel like we've kind of beaten a dead horse on that situation. Like we know what's happening. We know the challenges we're facing. And now it's time to kind of get into the forward thinking, like forward moving, like, hey, we got to start doing other stuff. So we're moving forward. The next big piece of information was really, really interesting because both the Napa Vintners, as well as there was an economist that presented to us today, hyped up the idea that, you know, wine prices had have been increasing and that people have been willing to purchase more expensive wines. And then that was like a great thing that we've seen, you know, people have relatively little resistance to the price increases that have come over the last few years, that as it pertains to Napa, because let's face it, Napa wines aren't cheap, right? They're just not. You can easily go to any liquor store or grocery store and buy something that's $7.99, $12.99, $19.99, whatever. You don't need to be spending $125 on a bottle of Cabernet if you don't want to. Granted, you get what you pay for. Many of you understand that in terms of quality, in terms of your connection to that label and that brand and the people you're supporting. You get what you pay for, which, you know, if you love to support Gallo and Apothic Red, you know what? Have at it. If you love to support The Prisoner, I mean, have at it. I'm going to talk my trash as I normally would, but as long as you're drinking wine, I'm here for it. Because wine is still, as I've mentioned many a time, third fiddle to beer and liquor by a long shot. Like, it's not even close how, like, we're so unpopular compared to beer and liquor that as long as you're drinking wine, I'm happy. But let's talk about that price increase, because we talked about the rising costs and things. And they touted this as like a good thing. And I might have mentioned this. I might be reiterating a little bit of the story, because there's a buddy of mine, I saw him today actually, where he, you know, hug on the way out of this meeting and after lunch. And this was, you know, after probably too many glasses of wine over at their place, at his place, you know, having dinner. And we were talking about pricing and why Napa can demand the prices that it does, and why wineries like us continue to stay in business despite our wines being far more expensive than what you can find outside of Napa Valley and outside of California, right? And his argument was that because of the work like the vintners do, how we market ourselves, the lack of supply, because Napa only is 4% of California's wine production. So very, very small on the national stage, even smaller on the international stage, that, you know, supply and demand kicks in. You know, between the marketing that we do, the advocacy that we have through an organization like the Napa Vintners, we're able to sell our wines for a premium. All that's true, of course. Basic supply and demand economics, I get it. But they noted that, you know, we've seen a rising price of wines, you know, go up roughly 30 to 40%. I think they quoted like something like 36% has been the increase in prices of the retail price of wine, of our wines, just in general as a valley and a wine growing region over the last 4 years. And that the fact that we can still sell them is a great thing. Which, you know, to be fair, yeah, it's nice that we get to stay in business. Not going to lie with, not going to argue with you there. But my counterpoint to, you know, this growth in terms of pricing that we've seen, and I, you know, growth is probably the, you know, most positive spin I could put on it. You know, outside of that, we'd use the word like inflation, you know, which is how I view it, is that that price increase has been necessary. You know, the costs of making our wines and doing business and what we've had to bear over the last 4 years far exceeds that price increase. And we are just trying to stop the bleeding in terms of the money we're spending to make our wines. That doesn't make that price increase a good thing. It's certainly not a good thing for you, the consumer, because that means you got to pay more for the same wine. But that's, you know, what we touched on, you know, with talking about inflation in the last Q&A episode, and why prices haven't receded is because we haven't seen a reason for prices to recede. Demand has stayed high. We've had low supply, which increase in high demand. So prices have continued to ramp up. And when you see the cost of doing business continue to increase in any industry, this isn't just wine. When the cost of doing business increases, that gets passed on to the consumer, period. That's how it works. We can't eat that. In fact, next week's episode, a little teaser for you, is we're going to get into like pricing and discounting and how businesses actually deal with that. We've touched on that a little bit in the past, but we've had a couple of questions regarding our wine specifically and other wineries and why discounts are a thing or not a thing, or who and how shipping is, you know, charged or not charged. And we're going to get into that in more detail. I need a whole nother episode for that, but we're going to dive into that in a big way next week. So little teaser for you there. So, you know, as my buddy and I were having this conversation, as I kind of heard this same theme today, I was like, you know, if I didn't have to charge this much for my wines, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. Because here's the deal. This is the crazy thing. This is a perfect example of kind of what I'm talking about. And this is where folks that are fans of our Merlot go crazy, because there's this weird thing happening right now. And this will illustrate the difference in making wine today versus 10 years ago. Is that we just, for the wine club shipment that went out, that some of you are going to be receiving, you're going to be receiving our 2015 Merlot, which I believe is $88 or $85 a bottle as it stands right now. Our current release, the wine we just released in the fall, our Merlot, the same wine from the same grower that has been our flagship wine for a decade and a half, at release, not 10 years down the line, 3 years down the line, is also $85 a bottle. How does that work? Why does that work? That makes no sense. How can this thing that was made 10 years ago not be more expensive than what was made today? Because you have to assume, and this is how library programs typically work in the wine industry, many of you have seen this with older vintages, is that there's some sort of premium being charged, right? There's a markup in some way, shape, or form because we've been storing it, we've had to insure that inventory, that we have to assess the risk of, you know, all that stuff. And we mark it up to a certain point. And some wineries will just do like a flat, like a $5 a bottle a year or a $3 bottle a year. Some folks will be a little bit more diligent and say, hey, you know, 2015 was a really great year and very low yielding, so there's less of it to go around. So that's a little higher price point, where in 2012, for example, we had a bunch of wine available and the quality was still good, but maybe we like our 15 better, so maybe the 12 is a little bit more affordable. So there's always like this little bit of wiggle room, like negotiation in the back office side of things of like, we want our wines to still be readily available and not, you know, break the bank for a lot of people, but we got to fine tune it based on what we're spending to store it and hang on to it for you guys so that when you buy an older vintage, you know, it's at least covering our cost of producing it and then hopefully make some profit on it to stay in business. But how is it that our 2021, our newest release, is the same price as a wine of ours that's 10 years old? It's the difference in cost of doing business right now. That 10-year difference and that price increase is bearing the cost of how expensive it's gotten over the last 10 years. And frankly, we haven't raised our prices enough to account for what we've seen. So going back to this kind of topic of like, oh, it's so great that, you know, we can charge this much for our wines. I look at that and I say, no, it's a fucking shame that we have to charge this much for our wines. Because we're doing it out of necessity. We're having to do it because if we don't raise our prices that 30 some odd percent, the math no longer makes sense. Our business plans and budgets no longer make sense. We have had to take these price increases to stay in business. And even then, many of us are still struggling to get by because the increase in cost and inflation and supply chain and everything that's happened over the last 4 or 5 years has been way, way, way exceeded our price increases. We're quite literally, as an industry, in my opinion, trying to stop the bleeding so that hopefully we see things start to recede. And I'm hopeful, because we've talked so much about great prices and the cost of doing business, if we start to see this great market really start to implode and a true correction happen, that things will start to level out. Again, as we talked about, you might not see prices recede a whole bunch, but at least, again, we'll stop the bleeding and we don't have to keep raising our prices. So it was an interesting point of conversation because there was a lot of positive feedback about it. And the second we kind of got out of the seminar, I'm talking with some other colleagues. I'm like, did you catch that? Like, did this make sense to you? And everyone's like, yeah, of course the wines are more expensive and we're selling them for more because our costs have gone up. It costs us so much more to make wine now than it did 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Like, the prices had to go up. We didn't have a choice. It was raise prices or go out of business. Like, that's the reality we live in. So it's a very interesting, and maybe it's a little bit contentious when it comes to Napa as like a brand and a wine region. For the following, like, this is what's going through my head. This is like pure like train of thought. Let's see if I can actually, you know, say this remotely efficiently or coherently. I'm a firm believer that Napa is, in essence, and some producers in Napa, I should say, are in essence like the first growths or Grand Crus of the United States. When it comes to, you know, Cabernet Sauvignon, your Bordeaux blends, it's hard to argue that we're not on par with the right and left bank and some of the first growths. That Sonoma, the Russian River, you know, Santa Rita Hills or Anderson Valley, and some of the top-notch Pinot Noirs coming out of California aren't on par, or Oregon for that matter, aren't on par with Burgundy and their Grand Crus. That some of the best provincial rosés that have come out of the south of France, that we can't make great rosé here. That, you know, some of the most amazing food wines you've ever had from Italy, you know, that can't be done here either. On a world stage, you know, there's a lot of great things to be had from Napa specifically, California, U.S. as a whole. It just depends on what you like as a consumer and where you want to spend your disposable income, right? Does selling your wine, your bottle of wine, for a boatload of money, more than the average bottle of wine, is that really something you should be, you know, patting yourself on the back for? You know, do we think that the folks at Screaming Eagle, every time they sell a bottle, are like, man, I can't believe we're fucking, can you believe how much we're selling this for? This is so great. This is crazy. You know, and frankly, I don't, who knows, you know, what goes on in those meetings. I don't even know Stan Kroenke and Ms. Walton are involved in those meetings often, but I'm sure they are at some point. It's a business asset of theirs. This is such a weird feeling for me. And some of you, this is, if you're listening to this on Wednesday, February 5th, in the evenings, we try and do this a few times a year. It's tough for me because of the amount of travel, because of harvest, everything that we have going on. I try and do it once a month. It never ends up being that way. But for those folks that have bought into and are part of our Grand Cask program and our allocation program, we try to do a few times a year, if not monthly, a little happy hour kind of get together at the beginning of the month. And it's an expensive bottle of wine. This bottle of Cabernet is $325 a bottle. You know, our normal Napa Cab is $125. It's a big jump to buy this bottle of wine. When you buy, you know, a three pack of this Grand Cask, shipping's included, taxes included, it's just the flat rate price that you see. You get invitations to our events around the country. We do this happy hour as often as we can. Like, I try and provide a lot of value to it to make it make some semblance of sense and make a connection with people rather than a place that has an allocation list that just tells you you are blessed and so lucky to be able to buy our wine. No, you can't come to the property. No, you can't do a tasting. No, you can't do this. You just have to pay $1,200 a bottle and hope you like it. It bugs the shit out of me. Which is why we started the Grand Cask program, was kind of the antithesis of, you know, what expensive wines have very much become over recent years and over the last 20, 25 years in particular. Am I happy that providing that value add and covering shipping and sales tax and all this stuff, like, does it make me happy that I'm charging that amount for that bottle of wine? Some of you are going to be surprised when I say this. The answer is no. I wish that I could make that same bottle of wine and do all those things for everyone who's on that mailing list and a part of that allocation list, but the math does not work otherwise. And that's where so many of us in the industry are today. So as much as we tout and as consumers, you know, I think it's natural for any of us as consumers of any good or service, right? That if you're buying a certain thing or enjoying a dinner somewhere and you're paying a certain price, the higher the price point with whatever consumer thing, consumer good it is or event or experience it is, the higher the price, the more you expect that it should inherently be objectively better than, say, something else. That's typically how it works. And then you get to something like wine, which is more of an art form, and you can say, well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Maybe that $325 makes all the sense in the world because of how good it is, because of the value add. And then for some folks, they're like, that's not a thing. It goes back to that Seinfeld episode that I can't remember it. I think it's Jerry and Elaine, or maybe it's whoever. And they're arguing about who would pay $7 for a bottle of wine, right? Like some people just doesn't make sense. Like for me, I drive, my daily driver typically is a 2011 Subaru that I bought. It was my first car that I really bought by myself. It's got almost 160,000 miles on it. It's beat up. The paint's chipping. One of the rear view, you know, side mirrors is a different color than the rest of the car because Brittany hit a trash can with it and I had to put it back together. Sorry, Britt. But I fixed it. It works. It's a beater. It's getting to that point. It's that beater car you pass down to like the next generation and be like, hey, this, if you can drive this and survive, you'll be fine. Right? I have no interest in buying a high performance vehicle. In fact, actually also at the seminar that we were just at, Rivian, the electric car company, did a presentation. And they're beautiful vehicles. The technology in them is outstanding, like no doubt about it. But for something like somewhere for 100 to 120 grand for their truck, which is what I would end up buying because I need a work truck. And I want a work truck. I want a nice work truck, but I love my Dodge. It's just about paid off. And, you know, for my purposes, like the Dodge I have, it's got Bluetooth and AM radio. It's got nothing else. It's as bare bone gets, but it's a work truck. What else do I need it for? I need to be able to put bins in the back of it and throw, you know, maybe haul something every once in a while. That's it. I don't need this fancy, super expensive thing. And I chose to spend my money on the cheaper version of the truck rather than buy the styled out, super limited edition vehicle because I'm like, I just don't care. And the same thing applies to wine or any other consumer good, right? Like at some point, you know, there are wines that I've tasted. I'm like, oh, this is really, really good. And I look at the price. I'm like, ooh, it's not that good, you know? And people have said that to me about our wines. Shoot, this happened this last weekend. Another great example of this. We are at a tasting down at Loyola Marymount University. Luckily, they let a zag like me in the front doors. I was very surprised. I expected to be stopped and be like, no, 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 we can't. Gonzaga grads, like, you're not allowed in here. But they let me in. They were very nice. They razzed me pretty good, which was good. But there's someone who's interested. We brought a bottle of Cab Franc because we had some fans of ours down there that are into Cab Franc, and we don't have a lot of it left, but I'm like, you know what? I can spare a bottle and we'll share it with some people. And there was a couple that had was sent our way by a friend of ours. They said, we got to try your Cab Franc. They tried it and like, oh my God, we need a case of that. We love it. It's our favorite wine of the night. I said, great. It's, you know how much it is. And they're like, doesn't matter. Like we need a case. I'm like, okay, it's $150 a bottle. And like, ooh, it does matter. It's an expensive bottle of wine. We only make a barrel of it. You know, it's an expensive bottle of wine. I get it. Did I like that feeling of someone going like, oh, it was really good, but now that we know the price, it's not that good anymore. And it sucks. And I think that's where Napa as a whole, like we're kind of towing that line a little bit where it's this expensive to make some of these wines, especially at a small scale. Like it's, we are charged top dollar for everything. We don't meet any minimums for any of the goods or services that we do. So we're naturally paying sometimes 2x what we normally would, or even more than that in some situations, sometimes 4x. It sucks. So when we see these expensive wines and people like at the seminar kind of touting the, it's so nice that we can charge this much for our wines. I'm like, no, it's not. This is the exact opposite of good. Now, I think Mike, our friend out on the East Coast, you know, asked during our Q&A, you know, hey, is this just what the market will bear? Or is this actual, you're seeing these costs increase in your supply chain? And it's like, yes, we're just naturally seeing the costs of doing business. It's just expensive. And we have to charge a certain price to make a certain amount of money to stay in business. And it's not necessarily a good thing, especially for consumers. You know, this is why for like us as a wine brand, we've looked at different glass suppliers, different corks, different labels. We're doing a lot to try and mitigate as much of the cost as we can, because I'm tired of asking for more and more money just because it's more expensive. We are, as an industry, and I like to think a lot of my colleagues are doing the same thing, where we've seen how this has impacted our business, how it's impacting you all as wine lovers. And I don't think a lot of us like it. I honestly don't think that a lot of us are on board with the idea that it's great that we can charge so much for our wines. I think many of us would gladly say, like, hey, if I could take 20 or 30% off and still make a living and live here and make the quality of wine that we do, then we would do it. But there's not a business in this valley that can make that financially work. It's just not possible. I mean, maybe there's some people really gouging consumers out there. I don't know who they are. But I mean, I doubt you get away with that for very long before people start talking their shit, you know. It's pretty easy to figure out realistically. So we're in a weird place. And I think, you know, this is part of kind of the I would guess the political spin on where the wine industry is. It's like things are better than they assume, like then better than it's making out. Meanwhile, you see sales down everywhere. Inventories long everywhere. Oh, but maybe like 40% of the people were up last year. I'm like, cool. That still means a majority of wineries had a tough time last year. Yet you're happy we can charge more just for the sake of being able to charge more. That doesn't make any sense to me. You know, and I'm very much hoping that what people took away from this seminar that we were at, I hope they take away the same thing that I did. And I think as I talked more with people afterwards, and I think this will happen over the next few months as well, as we're talking with more and more people after this, is that I think we'll agree that, hey, we're not charging this price because we can. We're charging it because we have to. And that's why I wanted to kind of dive. That's why I teased kind of next week's episode, was like, we're going to get into this like in a lot more detail to give you examples of why this is. You know, I'm trying to think of the right way to get into my next point. In this industry, for some reason, I felt this way more and more over recent years, is that wineries, 99 times out of 100, get caught holding the bag. It's not the distributors, it's not the restaurants, it's not the retail shops, it hasn't been the vineyards for a long time, up until last year. We get stuck holding the bag. Because we're hit up for product for donations and special events. We're asked for free shipping or case specials. We're asked, hey, this retail shop, our distributors ask us, like, hey, can we do a special pricing or deal? Can we provide for every case they buy? Can we give them, you know, an extra few bottles? We have to go on the road and support distributors and sales teams. We have to, you know, put in a lot of time and money and effort into making our businesses go. We're asked every single day to do more for everybody in the chain of business that is wine, outside of just y'all as consumers, because you guys are great. Honestly, you're the easiest to deal with. Love you guys. But outside of that, we're asked for so much. And in the face of rising costs and expenses and having to charge more for our wine, we're sitting here like, just when does it end? Like, when can we have a year where it's like we can just maintain and be like comfortable? And realistically, the last time that happened would have been like 2020 into 2021, because there was such a boom in the business. We saw this big bubble of y'all. You know, happy hour, as we've talked about, was very, very early in the day in the post-COVID world. And we saw wine sales go way up, which we all thought was great. I think if you are betting on that in the long term, you are foolish, because people are going to go back to work at some point, and you're seeing the ramifications of that now and how that's playing out for some businesses that put a lot of eggs in that basket. But it was like, man, it's like wine is selling. People are thirsty. We're not having to wheel and deal as much. Like, this is great. And now we're right back into that position of like, okay, what are people going to ask us to do? Because times are tough. I'm really curious how it's going to shake out. This meeting was interesting. And this point about pricing, and it's so nice that we can charge as much as we do, is such a red herring or a fallacy or something. I don't even know what word to use to describe it and what it is. It's just, it's frustrating. I remember this was the story of, I think it was, I might be wrong on this, so don't quote me, but I'm going to say it anyway. Because I think when Will Harlan, not Bill, his dad, it's Harlan Bond. I mean, obviously Will's his son, like he's involved, but he started the mascot, I think it was, years ago, which was all the young vines, anything they were like replanting for Bond, Harlan, the maiden, whatever. Any of the young vines that weren't ready yet, they kind of pushed into the mascot. And it was initially marketed as this, hey, we make these high-end cabs, but, you know, the young people, the millennials at that time, can't afford hundreds of dollars a bottle. So we want to make something that was affordable and something that was easy to access for people. And I think it came out like $85 a bottle at that time. Maybe it was a little more than that. And I remember sitting in my Section 8 housing or where in Yountville, you know, making less than like $28,000 a year, being like, pfft. Like, there's no hate on them, but I'm like, this is not affordable for us. I don't know what you're talking about. My $3 beers at Ponches back in the day were my budget. You know what I mean? For those of you that know Ponches, you know, back when it was that beautiful Hell's Angels dive bar in Yountville. And it's, I feel as though, as great as, and I mentioned this, is, you know, Napa being kind of this premier, you know, top shelf wine industry in the world, you know, a few moments ago, as great as that is, there's like this, these little hints that pop up every once in a while. I'm like, are we a little too big for our britches? Is there a lot of stuff out there that's frankly a very high price and the quality and bang for your buck just isn't there? But because the demand is so high, that perceived quality kind of gets blurred. It becomes this gray area of like, oh, so little of it's made, and yeah, it's a little rough around the edges, but you know, they only made 4 barrels of it. Shoot, I feel like that about our wines. I get imposter syndrome about that all the time, where people are like, this wine is so good. I mean, this happened, even that couple I mentioned about the Cab Franc, they loved it. It was their favorite wine of the night until I told them the price. And I'm still like, I told them how much it was, I was like, that's crazy to me that you love this wine this much. There's so many good wines in this room. The fact that you think mine was your favorite of the night is outrageous to me. It does not make sense. But it's an immense compliment, and I try and be humble about it as much as I can. I totally lost my train of thought. Shoot, I thought I was on one. I thought I had a really good point going there. Damn it, this happens every once in a while. You've been listening for a while. You know this happens. Let's reset for a second. 3, 2, 1. All right, get back into it. I think it's the ramifications of kind of where we're at economically, where this industry is going, the prices that are being charged. It's been a hot topic to dive into. I think these meetings within the industry and hearing from you all as consumers is great, because we can collaborate as an industry. And when we get feedback from you all, that helps. And I'm very excited. I'll do one more. I think it's the third time I'm teasing this episode, because after today's meeting and going through, you know, what we talked about here today, next week's episode, I'm so excited to get into. It is a pure like dollars and cents getting into wine pricing. And it's going to be fantastic. Speaking of wineries getting stuck holding the bag and all that stuff, like it is going to be a very important conversation. I hope that many of you tune into it, because I think it'll give you some really great perspective on some of the stuff we talked about today. Why I think, you know, as nice as it is that we can charge what we do for our wines, that it is makes it equally as tough to sell them at times. And that I hope that there's some sort of equilibrium that's found in the coming years without pulling the entire rug out from the industry, from our grape growers, from the businesses that we love and love to support, and that you love to support as well. I think there is a middle ground to be had here, and we're just going to have to kind of work our way through this forest to get to the clearing so we can actually sit down and sort it all out. We're getting there. I really think we do. I think these collaborative moments within the industry, it's one of the reasons why I love where we are, what we do. It's because we actually get together and hash this stuff out and figure out, like, hey, does this actually make sense? And if no, why and what can we do? And if yes, are we sure? Or is there room for improvement? And where can we go from here? All right, that's enough of my rambling for the day. I appreciate you all tuning in. Hopefully that made some sense. I was pure excited to get out of this meeting and come and do today's episode, because it was like this really deep, like philosophical, where's the industry at? How are we moving forward as it pertains to the business sales in particular, and the costs of what we do, and the support that you all very willingly give us when you purchase our wines or tune into the show here or visit Napa or other wine regions for that matter. This is really getting to the core of what so many wine regions have to deal with year in, year out, day in, day out, when it comes to how they promote themselves, how they sell their wines, the quality that they're able to provide to their clientele. And if there's one thing that I can, and this is something that the vintners echoed during this meeting, is, you know, if there are questions, concerns, and this is why, I mean, Brittany and I have stayed as small as we have, please voice them and get in touch with these places that you love. I know it creates more work. I know in the social digital age, it's annoying and it takes time. And picking up the phone is not nearly as normal as it was 20 years ago. But we are an old school industry. We move at a snail's pace when it comes to innovation. We're a bunch of artists, very typically. And we're a little slow on the uptake. And we're trying to do our best, I think, to be here for you and provide great experiences, great products, and hopefully great relationships with the product or products you consume, which is more that can be said than many, many other consumer goods that are out there. So hopefully the price continues to be worth it. Hopefully we find a little bit more of an equilibrium as the economy settles and shakes itself out a little bit more in the coming months or years, and that we all continue to, you know, raise a good glass of wine, or in my case right now, with a scratchy throat, a little bit of tea just to keep me going. All right, I love you guys. Have a great rest of your day, week, all the things. We will see you next week for the Wind Up Podcast. Be sure again to follow us on all of our social networks. That's the YouTube, Instagram, the Book of Face and social network formerly known as Twitter. You can find out more information about us on mtjwines.com. You can also submit questions to our Q&A episode at the end of every month through sliding in to our DMs or going to that homepage on our website and entering that email form. Check out Premier Crew Clothing, CRUclothing.com, to go get yourself 20% off with code Premier during checkout. Love you all. Mean it, and we will see you next time on the Wind Up Podcast. Cheers.